Hi, my name is Ricky Adamson, and welcome to Vista Higher Learning's podcast series, The Language Imperative. Vista's commitment for the past 25 years has been providing language solutions. We're proud to sponsor and share the work of those organizations, institutions, and individuals that serve and strengthen language education for all. As the preeminent language and literacy publisher in the United States, Vista's singular focus is empowering you as a language educator with the tools and research-based knowledge that you need to meet the needs of all learners. Whether you're guiding students in learning a new language, improving an additional language, or perfecting their native language, Vista is for you. Thank you for letting us share this podcast with you. Today we have as our guest, Dr. Jenny Trujillo. So welcome, Dr. Trujillo. What would you like our listeners to know about you?
Thank you, Ricky. I'm so excited to be with you today, and I am really excited to share a little bit about my personal and professional life. I actually grew up in Caracas, Venezuela. My father's American, my mother is Venezolana, and so I moved back and forth between the two countries. And that really is what gave me my passion, you know, coming here at age 11 into the elementary school system of the United States. And so from there, I actually had a counselor who said to me, "Is it true that you speak Spanish at home?" And I said, yes. And he said, well, you need to stop because it's going to confuse you and you're not going to do well in school. Of course, this was the olden days, but even so, we still encounter some biases at times. And so that day I decided I really want to embrace language, embrace who I am, and be a bilingual person. So I became a bilingual teacher and then a professor and author and have spent a lot of my life working with language learners. So very passionate about it personally and professionally for that reason. So I now am the Dean of Education at Fort Lewis College. We're a Native American-serving non-tribal institution, and I'm very lucky to work with Vista, working on materials for English learners and language learners because I really believe that the materials that you use help us so much in education.
Yeah, I agree. From my time teaching, how things have changed so quickly with the technology and the tools, as you referenced, that Vista offers. With our programs, I look at those and I think, oh, I wish I had had that back then. And I know that you have an interest also in AI, artificial intelligence. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. What inspired you to focus on the intersection of AI and multilingual learners?
It's such an important question, Ricky, because one of the things we're really seeing is corporate America, the K-12 schools, academia, people just running to or from artificial intelligence. And so as an educator, I mentioned with my own background and really specializing in working with language learners materials, I'm always looking for those opportunities to differentiate, to enhance, to really embrace whatever scaffolds we have to help our language learners be successful. And it just seems like things are moving at the speed of light right now. And so I became very interested to say, is this authentic? Is it dangerous? Is it scary? Is it going to replace humans? Or is it in fact something that could be used as a tool in education rather than just a trend? And so that's when I really started to investigate and research, what is it? How can we use it? And can it help our learners? And I so far think there's a lot of good to be said about it.
And you mentioned differentiation and scaffolding, and that was an aha moment to me because as teachers, we're always looking for the best ways to differentiate and to scaffold for learners. And I can see how AI could take that to a new level, so to speak. When you talk about AI, do you think in the field of education that the rapid adoption of it, is it more of a push from technological advancements or a pull from educators seeking new tools, such as those teachers that are looking for differentiation and scaffolding?
Yeah. It's a really great metaphor, you know, to think about it as a magnet. You know, is it a force that's pushing things apart or is it a force that's pulling things together? And there's really polar opposite and polar extremes right now in that there's some people that have a lot of fear of it. And sometimes what you see with fear is just the unknown and people not really recognizing that you need to delve into it and try it to see what it is that could help you differentiate and how you can use it as a tool. Largely, particularly in academia and higher education, there's still some sentiment of AI around plagiarism and the use of ChatGPT and things like that to generate. But the most important thing in terms of that magnetism is to really get in there yourself and say, there are, in fact, lots of ways that through this adoption, we can use it as differentiating and great opportunity for scaffolding, a great opportunity to really look at what students need. One of the most important things around differentiation, and you know this, Ricky, from your background, is that we're not a homogenous group of speakers, right? So even with newcomers, for example, who are English learners, we have people who are really, you know, SLIF background, who've been through very difficult things as refugees. We have students in the United States who've had, for example, Spanish as their home language the entire time. And so when they become school age, they start learning English and other languages. And so thinking about a one size fits all or that we're all the same kinds of learners is really a big mistake. And so needing to differentiate is always something that teachers are looking for and seeking and finding ways to do that. Not that it doesn't come without cautions. There's always, as you use any tool, we always need to explore what our limitations are. But the notion that we are a heterogeneous group, multiple languages, multiple socioeconomic backgrounds, multiple races and ethnicities, multiple life experiences, each of us come to life with our own story, and that translates to school too. And so for that reason, I really think that just examining, not instantly being attracted to it and getting right in there and just all in, versus the people that are totally rejecting it, you know, the push against it. Either of those are probably two polar opposite extremes. And really what you need to do is just get in there, get in the middle and find out what works for you.
Oh, it's interesting you say that. When I work with teachers, when I'm training teachers, one of the things that I always tell them is don't feel as if at the beginning you have to use everything, but find something and try it out. See how it works, and maybe then start adding other things. So it sounds as if maybe that's what you're saying also with AI, just
absolutely,
a little bit at a time.
A little at a time, and that's the key to everything, is always moderation. You know, there'll be people who really, as I mentioned, go all in for this, and others who are very wary. But it is really interesting. I'll tell you a quick story about a panel of students that we were working with for an AI conference, some multilingual learners, some indigenous students, some Spanish speakers, several languages actually. And it was polled, you know, how they do the doodle polls when you're there in the session. And they asked the professors, the teachers, and sort of the adults in the room, how much exposure they had had to AI, if they had used it. And more than 80% had never used AI, so they thought, or had very little attention to it. And then the students on the flip side, more than 80% had used it. And so as they projected those statistics on the screen, one of the students said, "We're going to pass you by." And I think that's one of the things about technology, is that we have to always be willing to learn and grow. As educators, we're always seeking new knowledge. And so recognizing that the students are in it, corporate America's in it, it is going to pass us by if we're not at least paying attention. So it's better to find out what you can, find out how it can be used for you, and then take it from there.
Another thing you mentioned, and it made me smile, talking about the students, 80% had used AI.
Yeah.
Compared with the teachers or instructors, educators, not as much, is one of the other ways that often we help tell teachers to not be scared of technology is to remind them that a lot of times the students already know it and use it. And sometimes they may be able to teach us a few things about it that benefit us. So it sounds as if AI is the same thing when we talk about students and teachers. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. But can you elaborate a little bit about how AI tools should be tailored to meet the needs of diverse multilingual learners?
Exactly. It's an important point, because as I mentioned about the diversity, the homogeneity of language learners is such that you have, you know, your different levels, newcomers that are really just new to the language, people that are working on grammar and syntax. My own mother, for example, who's been in the U.S. for a number of years and has a really strong accent and pronunciation. And, you know, due to the age at which she learned English, that will never disappear. But there are many tools that you can look at that aren't a one size that really help you differentiate. One of the things that we're really seeing because of that large range across the four domains of language listening, speaking, reading, and writing, that we're seeing is the notion of attention to readability. And so one of the things that people are doing is taking text, could be a text from whatever our Vista curriculum, and then entering it and then getting it to come out at a lower readability level so it's more accessible for someone with lower levels of proficiency. Or on the other hand, we may want to push students. And that's something we face sometimes with language learners is people are too willing to just let people rest in the zone where they're comfortable and not pushing them, because we want to respect the affective filter. We want to respect the social emotional pieces, but we also want them to grow and learn and not plateau. In states like California, we see a lot of our multilingual learners who have been in programs for, you know, well beyond 5 or 6 years, some students even into the 10-year mark. And so AI is a great spot where you can look at differentiation around reading, but we also want to make sure that we're attending to syntax. So in the same way that we can make something more simple, we can also make something more complex. So in the English language, expanding it, students writing into how would you cast this as a compound, complex sentence. And with a ChatGPT or many of the different AI platforms we can use, a student can instantly see how to expand that. It's a lot easier for teachers who are filled with a room full of students who need them and each need them so much at their level. And so it gives us those opportunities. So the readability is an example of something that we can take higher or lower. Sometimes, especially as students enter into the high school realm as language learners, they may need some help going through the ocean of words. This is what I used to tell students when I was a more of a direct teacher of language learners, is I felt that way as a language learner. Even though I spoke English when I moved to the United States because my father is American, I had attended schools in Spanish speaking. And so I would get these academic texts and I would just not even know where to start sometimes. And I would think of myself as a pretty fluent person, but I actually needed more academic language and more work on that. And so that ocean of words, I would sometimes feel overwhelmed. How am I going to do this? Because I thought of myself as smart. I thought of myself as capable of a good student. And you know, not all of our students feel that way about themselves. So any tool that you can give that can distill information, that can help summarize, those are the things that we need. But as I mentioned, some students are lower in proficiency, some are higher. And so you really want to not take it as a one-size-fits-all, but recognize, start with where the student is. And like any tool you would use that to help augment what it is they need from where they need it to start.
And so we've been talking about those tools. You've mentioned reading and syntax and how that can be a great tool, a great form of differentiation, scaffolding, and the things of that nature. But as you talk about those, what are some of the other most promising AI tools you've encountered that will support language acquisition and literacy development as well?
It's such an important question, because earlier you asked about, you know, there's so many things that people can choose from to do. And I talked about the ocean of words and how much there is to choose from. And AI is absolutely exploding. And so it's hard for educators to know. But some of the, you know, ones that I've really been thinking about working with language learners and working here both with adult learners at the college level as well, is really to attend to four things. And that is to really think about the domains of listening and speaking, and then reading and writing as well. We just talked a little bit about syntax and readability. But it's also important to make sure that you're staying tied to the curriculum and finding AI tools that really enhance whatever you're doing. If you're working with Get Ready, with newcomers, or whatever curriculum you're using, it's really important that you hook onto this and find a way to make it be a tool for you and not just a trend, some cool thing that everybody is up to. So one of the ones that I really like for speaking in particular, I mentioned my mother, you know, continuing with her Spanish accent, and she'll always have it because of the age at which that she learned English. But at the same time, she really likes to practice her pronunciation. And I have found the same thing with 6-year-olds and 16-year-olds and 70-year-olds, that there can be a tool for that. So one of the neat ones is called Speakable, and that's a free platform that you can use that, you know, any of our voice recognition things, it's nice to get that feedback. And one of the things that's nice about AI, you mentioned, Ricky, the individual nature of working with English learners, any of our language learners, our multilingual students, is that they do need individual attention. And when people are developing language, sometimes you feel self-conscious, sometimes you feel nervous about how you sound. So if you were practicing for a presentation in front of our students, you know, so many of our state standards now require presentation and that notion of oral speaking in front of others. That is becoming, you know, even the video naturalness of being on a Zoom or something and getting prepared for that. So it can help students to have a little bit of practice with the speech recognition and the pronunciation. So that's one that I really like. And then everyone knows just about ChatGPT. And ChatGPT is such a great platform in terms of supporting students, the things I mentioned around summarizing, synthesizing. When you use AI as a tool to help you with some of that kind of low level, you know, if we think as educators of Bloom's taxonomy, things around recall, things that you're just gathering up, it really allows you as your human brain to really think about synthesizing and some of the higher order critical thinking skills, because ultimately it comes down to the fact it's always going to be a partnership. AI can only generate, it can never create. That's us as humans with our creativity. And so having those opportunities to really put some tools in front of our students that help augment, enhance the assets that they bring forward, that's really where the special sauce is, the salsa that we say. It really makes it exciting when you see somebody light up, which is what we love as educators, to feel good about what they're saying, about what they're hearing, about what they're able to read and write, because they actually can often do more than their language level implies.
You know, I think back to those kids that I would ask them a question. And when I say those kids, I'm talking about teaching reading, teaching French, teaching 10th and 12th grade English, and calling on a kid to answer a question, and how all of a sudden I could see them tense up because they were afraid. And the idea of AI being able to help take some of that away, give them that chance to practice, make them feel more confident.
Yes.
That's just, to me, it's a bonus to everything else that it offers.
And absolutely.
I could see that really helping kids with the confidence to then want to push forward. Because once you feel confident in something, you're willing to keep trying. And you also mentioned something that I think teachers need to hear and want to hear, is that it's a partnership.
Yes.
With AI. The AI generates, we as teachers create. That's a great way of explaining it. And I'm so glad you said that. That's the first time I've heard it explained that way. And I think that is perfect.
I wanted to also mention the importance of visuals, as you well know, as a language teacher, that the image generators we can use. So ChatGPT also, of course, has that internally, but there's a lot of platforms out there in AI that can help you generate images. And I know from having been a first grade bilingual teacher to teaching high school to teaching at the college level, that we often want our language learners to have visuals included, because when you can show versus tell, it gives you so much language. It augments everything. And so many of our students are visual learners, because from a picture, you can really learn language and produce language. But we've all had those students that are artists, you know, and they really love to take their time with the images that they're creating. And so when you can generate an image through AI, it can instantly do it. It can be so creative and can even pull in more than the student even imagined. If you've seen any AI-generated images that are out there, sometimes there's incredible, beautiful things that can be generated as it relates to language. So that's one that I would add in terms of language acquisition and literacy development that really effectively supports our language learners in a way that helps pacing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The research, you know, says that students remember the images a lot of times, that sticks with them. So that is so important that we don't leave that aspect out.
Yeah.
And the more you talk, the more excited I get just thinking of my own teaching experiences. About, I used a lot of visuals, but the idea that I could use AI to create specific images I'm needing for my students, that really speaks to me, as opposed to, as we used to always do, go right. Find clip art right. Or use our transparencies with yes. Our overhead projector back in the day.
I was there with you, Ricky.
No, we're talking about diversity here. We're talking about diverse learners and making sure we're focusing on each student's needs. So we know that equity is a major theme in what you do and your focus here at Vista Higher Learning. How can educators ensure that AI tools are used in ways that promote equity rather than exacerbate existing disparities?
Absolutely. Well, one of the criticisms of AI is the implicit bias, because as I mentioned, and you spoke to that, that we are creators, whereas AI is a generator. So what it does is scans the internet and available data and input when it wants to create something. So just as I was speaking about the image generation that you can do, which can be so effective, one of the things that happens, let's say you're trying to create an image of a person, you're studying adjectives and you want to talk about facial features. Let's just say it's a newcomer, like something with Get Ready or one of those early opportunities that you have to teach something like English. When you start giving commands to AI, it will typically default to a Caucasian face. And so what is in the mainstream typically that you see on the internet, you have to learn to start giving prompts that are very finite. And that's actually one of the things that is helpful about AI linguistically, is learning to speak to it and give prompts not like Google search, but really becoming very finite with your commands, with your prompts. That's actually a whole generation rather of developers right now, is people who are learning how to give those type of prompts linguistically so that it can become more finite and you actually produce what it is that you want to see. The other thing that happens for the people, particularly in education, who are worried about AI in terms of plagiarism, students not finding their things, is we already struggle in our society with sometimes our multilingual learners or students of color being cast in a particular way in a deficit manner. And so we want to use AI to lift students up and not look at it in that opposite direction. There are AI tools that predate even some of the things that you're seeing now, programs. I wouldn't name any specific ones, but there's programs that check for plagiarism. And some of those were actually coded in those early years to look for non-standard English. So if it located Ebonics, Black English, if it located something that would imply an accent, it actually auto-generated it to a second level of search. So we know that implicit bias exists in some of the coding and some of those pieces. But what we want to do is find opportunities for AI to be used, as I mentioned, to enhance what a learner can do, not to catch students at things like that. And lots of learners today are looking to AI to help generate ideas, to help them give them. And just like the advent of the internet, you know, when we had to start teaching students about information literacy, are you seeing what's correct out there? Are you finding and analyzing for yourself if what pulled up when you did an internet search is accurate? It's the same kind of critical thinking that we now have to do with AI. So some of the things that it can generate at times are false bibliographies. And so like with anything, you always want to teach students to go to the primary source to find those things. And I think it just gives us more of a chance to do that. So rather than seeing AI as a gotcha or you're cheating or something of that nature, we want to teach students to be critical in their thinking, to cross-check facts, to make sure that if it's a writing assignment that they've actually used it as a tool to help. I often compare it to a calculator. You know, when calculators, luckily that predates you and I, Ricky, but one of the things with calculators was, you know, it gave the automatic answer to a formulaic question that was inserted by the student and entered. But you still have to know the math behind it. You still have to be able to say, why is 12 times 7, 84? What does that mean in terms of sets, multiples, all of those pieces? And so getting our students to understand that point A to point B, yes, AI can quickly help you do that, but you're still going to have to do a lot of thinking for yourself. And so protecting students, teaching them some of the parameters of AI that we would want to see and not want to see, that's always going to be a part of our job as educators. And so that comes to play in AI as well.
Sounds as if it actually enhances the students' research, because they have to then go back and research what they've just gotten from AI.
Exactly.
Which is always a good thing to double check.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was always, as a teacher, and I know so many teachers out there this way, I was always concerned that my students weren't seeing themselves reflected in the curriculum. And you touched on, with creating the images, if you get finite with it, that you can have those images that the students see themselves reflected in it, their multicultural attributes, which takes everything to a whole new level. Because, you know, when students see themselves reflected, then they think, yes, this is for me. They don't have the idea, oh, this is for other people. So I'm hearing and just thinking about all of these great ways that we can all incorporate it into education, whatever role we play in education. So it's really good to hear these things.
And it's a good point. It's a good point you bring that up, because, you know, one of the things I love about Vista Materials is that our students are reflected in those visuals, and students can really feel tied to that. And that's why I think it's important that AI is always considered a supplement, a connector, an enhancer, a differentiator. Because when students sometimes in their activities in a language textbook are directed to draw an image of X, Y, or Z, that's what I'm saying. It takes a long time sometimes for them to get their sketches just right with all the details they want. But at the same time, having the opportunity to generate something like that, just as you're saying, invites that diversity into that space. And especially for us as educators, no longer searching rather the clip art, but finding just that right image. So it's really powerful.
It is. It really is. It has me excited. I'm not, as I mentioned, I'm not in the classroom anymore, but it still has me really excited about the possibilities. And so, you know, we're talking about bringing all these things into the classroom and the teacher creating these images, or how students can research what they've found with AI. In talking about the learners themselves, the multilingual learners, in your experience, how do they respond to AI in their education?
So cool. Fantastico. One of the things that we're really seeing students like is the speed at which it can produce and generate things. So when a student has an opportunity to look at an exemplar in writing, or when they want to change the syntax to something more complex, or when they want to generate an image, what takes time is those finite prompts that you need to learn linguistically to give as commands, which is a type of teaching in itself. But they love the pictures that come out. I'm just hearing so much laughter and enjoyment, and they can play with it too. And that's the awesome thing about language, is that's what we all did as language learners in our beginning. Whatever languages we know, we played with languages. We sang songs. We said silly poems. We had stories that our grandmothers and other people in our lives, our teachers, you know, someday told us. So the fact that it can do some of those things, it can be silly, it can be funny, but it can be fast. One of the things we're finding, Ricky, especially post-COVID, is that we have a lot of students who feel anxious. There's actually a great book right now called The Anxious Generation that I would recommend that teachers and educators read, principals, whatever your role is in a school. Coming out of the pandemic, where students feel a little bit timid at times. So that's another space that I've seen, besides the enjoyment, the laughter, the fun, is that for our timid students who are feeling, it's not a shyness, they're just hesitant a little bit around education. Some of these students were on Zoom in their rooms during the pandemic. Some people were at their kitchen tables with five other family members. Some students were set up in a cool studio like we are right now, where they really know, you know, had top of the line things, but it's such a wide spectrum. Socioeconomically, linguistically, racially, ethnically, people come from all walks of life. And so for those hesitant students who haven't had as much experience, or who haven't had, you know, all the amenities in life, it's really giving that one-on-one chance to explore language, to rehearse things, to practice things, to try something, to risk, to fail, to do it again, and to know this is safe. You're going to be able to do this, and you're going to have the possibility someday maybe even of a sort of an AI tutor to help with these kind of things. Because you mentioned earlier, as an educator, you know, you've got 20 plus people. Some people have 30 people in their classrooms. Principals, I know people with who work with faculty and staff, same thing. They've got a lot of people that need things from them. And so just the opportunity to individualize, we're really finding language learners loving the many different things that you can do with AI.
I talked to teachers just recently. I was working with them, and I know, just thinking of them, how AI could help them, because they told me that because of the teacher shortage,
they have 50 students
yeah.
in their high school class.
Wow.
And I'm thinking of, okay, AI could really help those teachers and students so that each student is still getting what they need and the teachers are able to reach each student, even in such a large class. It just seems like there's so many ways that AI will enhance education. And as we move forward with it, how do you envision the role of AI evolving in the education of multilingual learners?
It's so interesting because how can you predict? You know, it's grown so quickly, it's just been on fire. But I think one of the things you mentioned with these large classrooms and the teacher shortage, not only with the attrition of people leaving the field, but just people coming into the field, you know, about a third of our licenses nationally are now alternative. And so I think AI is going to be a support not only for multilingual learners, but for our educators as well. Some of the examples that we've given today and being able to individualize. There's programs out there like Teacher Server, EduSphere that can help you with your small groups. But again, it's always going to be really important to be tied to that curriculum because one of the things that happened that people got really excited, I answered a similar question a while back about open ed resources and people thinking, oh, we're just going to, you know, get everything and just have this myriad set of things in our classrooms. And it really didn't turn out to be cohesive. We have standards that drive our work in education. We have accountability because we have to make sure that students are learning and that they're successful. So I think AI in a similar way with that ocean of possibility, we're always going to need to stay tied to two things, that partnership that we mentioned, which is the teacher, and that we stay tied to our curriculum so that we know that we are cohesively helping students advance. But as far as the wide world and what's out there, what I expect to see, I'm not afraid of it. I know that there's people saying, you know, would AI ever replace a teacher? Will we have, you know, just robots in classrooms? And kind of goes back to whatever sci-fi movie you ever saw from the days of old. And that's never going to happen because it's always going to be our human brain, our ingenuity, our creativity, our affective connection that keeps things moving in the future. But I do expect some really interesting things happening with avatars. I think substitute teachers is a place I would predict where maybe you put in a lesson plan and there's an avatar. You know, this is really imaginative, but maybe there's an avatar out there that's projected on a screen that's implementing a substitute teacher plan that you've inserted. Maybe there's things in your Vista curriculum that can be augmented, you know, can be read aloud. There's all kinds of different opportunities. And it's really for our students to be imagining this because they're going to be the ones driving so much of this work. But what I love about it is the time-saving options for principals, for superintendents, for teachers, for students, because we all, that's a classic thing you hear teachers say at all times is we don't have enough time to do everything that we want to do. So the ways in which it helps you with pacing, the ways in which it helps you individualize for learners, those things are going to be positive. And I only see that getting enhanced over the years.
And I'm sure many teachers are going to perk up when they hear you talk about the possibility maybe in the future of how it can help when they need a substitute teacher, because as we all know, sometimes it takes more work to get ready to have a substitute than it does to be there to teach. And you mentioned administrators, you mentioned principals, superintendents. I teach a graduate course, curriculum leadership, and you have me thinking already of how I can change my existing syllabus, my existing curriculum, and bring in some aspects, because I feel, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I do feel as if, because education is a partnership, yes, you know, we're wanting teachers to use it, but I feel as if superintendents, principals, curriculum directors, they all need to have that experience too. They need to be able to see the possibilities so that when they're supporting teachers, they can.
Yes, absolutely. You know, talk about people that need some time savers. The leaders in our school systems absolutely face some of the same things. And it's very important that they stay in the know, tied to trends, recognizing what's a trend and what's a tool, and how to maintain it in a way that's going to be manageable for their staff and faculty, for their students. But one of the things that we all know as, you know, I'm a college dean, I spend a lot of time in meetings. And so one of the AIs that I have found really useful that you may know of is something like Otter. So it's a program that, you know, can attend meetings for you. It records the PowerPoint slides and then summarizes for you at the end. But it also transcribes what's being said. And I've lately been using that, you know, in my work that's very equity focused. At times there's difficult topics that come up and challenging things. And so I'm really careful with my words. As a teacher of language, as a writer, as an author, I really think carefully about what I want to say and I reflect on that. And so I lately have been going back to my transcriptions and looking at it and saying, did I actually say what I wanted to say? Did I communicate in the way that I was hoping, that sounded empathetic and helped people to know that I care, but also attended to, frankly, the school of the business of school, that you have to get things done too. So I really am finding for leadership roles that it can be a time saver in terms of meetings, that you really have some time to go back and reflect on how that meeting went and what was said. So that's one of the ways that I'm personally using it. And I'm really seeing that work with some of our college leaders. I'm seeing that with some of our superintendents. You don't want to ever replace yourself because people are sending Otter to meetings, but you have to make sure you're going back. Even if you weren't there present in the flesh, you still need to make sure that you take the time to do what you would have done if you had been there. So again, the notion of it being a time saver, the notion of the ability to critically reflect, again, that's that human component that's always going to be there. Those are two powerful things I really think for leaders that we can use and exhibit.
Yeah, there's two words that keep coming to mind for me, productivity and efficiency.
Yeah.
And that's something I know that teachers are always wanting and looking for, as well as administrators. And it seems as if AI can be that partner to help that. So I'm hoping our conversation today has helped teachers with the fears they may have, and that it has excited them and they're thinking, oh, well, let me go try this.
Yeah.
So as we wrap everything up today, what is one thing you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think we've been naming it several times throughout our talk together today, and that is really that this is about connection. We always want to connect with our learners. We always want to connect with our colleagues and with our leaders, because education remains a system that can create positive change. We know that we do this with our curriculum materials, with our passion, with what we do with each other. And AI is just one more tool in the toolkit to fit into how we do that. And so that notion of connection is always going to contain that human element, because the spirit is not something that's ever going to be in a computer. It's always going to be something that we find in one another. But humans connect through language. And if AI can help you do that, then that's just one more tool for you to use.
Well, Dr. Trujillo, I thank you so much for taking a little of your time to talk with us about this today. I know you have me excited about all of it, and I look forward to visiting with you more in the future as more things roll out. But I do sincerely thank you, and I know our listeners do too. So I hope we do get to speak again. Come back and visit with me.
Thank you.
I'm sure I'll see you at Vista.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ricky. I have enjoyed my time so much today, and I'm excited for hearing what people think and moving all of our work forward. It's collective work, so thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. As an educator, you have the power to reimagine and reshape education. Vista Higher Learning is committed to giving you the best programs, resources, information, and support to ensure that your students succeed in school and in life. We are committed to being your partner in education, and thank you for letting us be there for you and your students. For more information about Vista solutions for your K-12 classroom, visit vistahigherlearning.com.